So again, a warm welcome to you all. Yeah, kind of continuing the theme of the meditation into the talk this evening, and the talk, as I mentioned, is awareness, the doorway to freedom. Awareness, the doorway to freedom. And I'd like to begin with just a very short reflection. This will be take a couple of minutes. But I'd invite you, you could if you want to, just let your eyes close or let your attention come inward. I'm just going to ask a couple of questions. If you think about, just reflect on, you know, what you're aware of right now, or maybe kind of today or this week. Maybe you could broaden it a little bit to this time in your life, you know, this period in your life, these days, these months, maybe the year. And just bring your awareness to your experience and might ask, you know, is there anything that feels like it's in the way or it's an obstacle to being truly at peace right now or at this time? Kind of truly with a sense of living, with a sense of ease, of well-being, sense of maybe freedom, of peace. Now, is there something that is out of kilter, as it were, maybe out of alignment in your experience? If you just think about maybe broadening from this moment right here into kind of your daily life in these days, you know, often it can come as something like, if only this were different. You know, is there something, you know, sometimes it could be as simple as, you know, if only I didn't have this aching back, or if only I was warmer right now. With a sense of like, I don't like this as it is. It might be something broader or deeper, like, if only my child wasn't having such a hard time at school, or if only I didn't have this illness, or if only I was in a relationship, or if only I didn't have these cravings for something or get angry so often. You know, some sense of, is there something that feels like, you know, it's some way a kind of an obstacle to being at peace, at ease at this time? Something that you want to be different. You know, it might even be like what's going on in the country, what's going on in the world. You know, maybe that's a thing that, you know, makes you feel tight and I don't like this, or I don't like this person, or I don't like this situation. So, you know, kind of what I'm inviting is an awareness of a sense of contraction, as it may be, a sense of resistance, a sense of separation between, you know, how you would aspire to be, like to be, and how and what actually you're experiencing, you know, what you're, you know, what you're experiencing now or at this time. So I invite that question, and if your eyes are closed, invite your, you know, just to let your eyes open again, come back, and just see, I mean, what came up for you. Maybe just to check in, if anyone would like to say, you know, anything that came up for you that you that felt like, oh, I want this to be different. And anyone who feels an inclination, no need to do so, but maybe just to just reflect. I mean, no. What I'm wanting to get at is the sense of a gap between how things are and how we want them to be. You know, it could be as in a very simple and, you know, immediate sense, or it could be in a larger sense of kind of how our life is kind of unfolding at this particular time. The Buddha was once asked to state his teachings in a very brief form. Perhaps it was by somebody who didn't have a lot of time to hear the full range of the teachings. The Buddha said, I teach one thing and one thing alone, suffering and its end. I teach one thing and one thing alone, suffering and its end. And a humorist might say, well, isn't that two things? But one thing and one thing alone, suffering and its end. So all of the Buddha's teachings revolve really around this question of suffering, this sense of resistance, a sense of a gap between how things are and how we want them to be, and how we can end suffering in our lives. And in a sense, every talk like the one I'm giving this evening, anything that kind of calls itself a Dharma talk, I think will in the end come back to this question of suffering and the end of suffering, whether it's a talk on loving kindness or gratitude or different particular the Noble Eightfold Path or whatever. That really all comes back, all of the teachings, very kind of systematic and wide-ranging teachings of the Buddha and or sometimes we call the Dharma, really come back to this question of suffering and finding an end to suffering. You know, if we stated it, the teachings in a slightly longer form than this suffering and the end of suffering, the Buddha framed them in terms of what are called the Four Noble Truths. I like to think of these as the Four Noble Propositions, you know, because they're not something that we'd take as truth, like, oh, this is true, you know, or something we believe in. But there's something to be tested and see, is this, you know, do I find this? Does this how I actually experience things in my own life? Then the first was that the Buddha taught that suffering is really part of human existence. You know, he said birth is suffering, sickness is suffering, aging, death is suffering. Getting what we don't want is suffering. Not getting what we do want is suffering. All of these manifest or are experienced as unpleasantness, as a good word really, and perhaps a better word than suffering, is a sense of unsatisfactoriness. Kind of like we want things to be other than they are. And in that separation, in that gap between how they are and how we want them to be, is this sense of unsatisfactoriness. The word in the Pali language, the first language of the Buddha's teachings, is dukkha, D-U-K-K-H-A. Dukkha often translated as suffering, but really this sense of unsatisfactoriness, wanting things to be different from how they are. Kind of this pervasive sense of we're kind of leaning towards wanting things to be the way we want them to be, we like them, and wanting to get rid of or push away experiences that we don't like, that we don't find pleasant, we don't find conducive in a sense to our well-being. And the second of these propositions or these noble truths is that suffering has its origins in clinging, in an unwise or an unskillful relationship to our experience. You know, we're either trying to hold on to wanting things that we, you know, to be the way we want them to be, or we're pushing away things that we don't like, or we're kind of spacing out if there's some level of boredom or discomfort, we're kind of checking out. We're in a struggle with our experience. We're in a struggle with life. And this is what the Buddha called clinging, you know, wanting things to be a certain way. We're in a struggle with our experience. We're in a struggle with life. The Buddha taught, again, another very simple teaching. He said, don't cling to anything as I or mine. That if we cling to anything, if we want to hold on to anything, you know, give permanence to anything, then we're going to suffer. When we cling, we suffer. So how do we cling? Just some examples. You know, when I want my partner or my boss or my kid to be other than they are, then I suffer. You know, not to say I don't care about what my kid is doing or what my boss is doing or what my partner or my spouse is doing. Wanting maybe, you know, if my child might be doing something that feels very, maybe an adult child doing something that feels, you know, I don't like that. That's really harmful to them, you know, and quite wise and quite appropriate that we care about them and we love them and we want them to be well and happy. But if we cling in that sense of holding on, thinking that we can ultimately control you know, their experience or their actions, then we're going to suffer. It's that contracted relationship with our experience that the Buddha talked about as clinging. Or when I'm caught up in worrying or stress about what might happen in the future, I'm clinging. I'm kind of leaning into the future. I'm wanting things to be a certain way. And I'm not really present with my experience. Again, that's another form of clinging that leads to suffering. Or when I'm caught up in wanting something I don't have. You know, if I'm craving something, or I'm, you know, craving a person or craving a drug or a drink or something, when there's that sense, again, I'm not talking about, oh, it'd be nice to have a glass of wine or nice to have a, you know, a Pellegrino or a nice meal, all of that, fine. But it's when there's this contraction, when the mind kind of contracts around anything, then there's suffering. And the Buddha said, when there's that clinging, there will be suffering. So clinging is the origin of suffering. Or when I escape from or space out from my experience and, you know, spend large amounts of time online or watching TV or kind of just somewhere else, then again, there's a gap between, I'm not really present for my experience, I'm somewhere else. And in that gap as well, there's suffering. So that's the second of these propositions. I just want to kind of lay them out in a very brief form and then kind of get into how we experience suffering and how we can find a way out of suffering. The third of these propositions or these truths, the third noble truth, is that the way out of suffering comes from letting go of clinging. You know, if clinging is the origin of suffering, then the end of suffering comes from, you know, from being able to let go of that clinging. You know, and it really comes from the willingness to be with our experience as it is, to let go of wanting to hold on and make permanent experience or push away experience, but rather just to say yes to what is, to open fully to just this moment as it is, just as we did in the meditation, or just as I invited you to do in the meditation, to welcome the guests. What we do then is we're coming into a wise, compassionate relationship with our experience. A good kind of metaphor that a colleague out on the West Coast, you know, uses. Philip Moffat wrote a book called Dancing with Life. It's kind of being in a relationship where we're kind of in a dance with our life, in a dance with our experience, so that we're not resisting. We're kind of like the way the water is when it kind of moves and comes up against an obstacle, kind of goes round it. And again, or like in a, you know, some martial arts of Aikido, where we're not like, you know, it's not about resistance, but it's about using the force, you know, using what's coming at us in a skillful way, letting things kind of go by. And it's that fluid relationship with our life and our experience that we're really cultivating, this letting go of clinging. And I think of the opposite of that is what we do a lot of the time. And I think of it as wrestling with life. You know, we're trying to pin life down. We're trying to make our experience be the way we want it to be. And again, it doesn't mean we don't try to, you know, have things come out, you know, in a beneficial way, you know, have our children be happy, put away money for our old age or whatever. All of those things can be wise and helpful and valuable. But it's when we do it in that sense of the contracted sense that we suffer. So the third of these propositions that when we can see into the way that we're holding on, then we can see how it leads to suffering, how the clinging leads to suffering. And by opening fully to our experience, we can find a way out. We can let go. You know, and there's a natural letting go that happens when we open fully to our experience. Kind of, we come to see, we can come to the insight that we can't really cling to anything. We can't hold on to anything. And when we try to, we suffer. You know, if you have a very peaceful one, you know, calm experience in meditation, you know, oh, that's really, really nice. And then you try and get it back. You know, oh, I want that again. You know, there's suffering in that. We kind of go back to where we can't hold on to anything. And when we try to, we suffer. So that letting go, seeing that it actually leads to suffering, so that clinging leads to suffering, that helps us to let go. We see that nothing can be held on to, that everything is changing. And if we really see that deeply, there's a kind of, we can come into a flowing, fluid relationship with our experience and with our life. And there's a great freedom that comes with that. And that's the freedom that the Buddha is speaking to. He's speaking that, you know, we can live a life completely free of suffering if we come into a wise and compassionate, an appropriate relationship with life, with our own experience. So the fourth of these noble truths or these propositions is that there is a path, that there is a skillful path, a training in cultivating wisdom, in cultivating ethics, or a kind of a virtue, living wisely, living kindly, living appropriately, and cultivating, training the mind through meditation, through focusing the mind, through wise effort, working wisely with our experience, that this is a path to the end of suffering. So the Buddha taught that the pathway, the doorway to the end of suffering, is always through the present moment. It's through bringing awareness, bringing a kind and non-judging awareness to our experience just as it is. So, you know, wherever we are is the doorway in. Now, you know, we might be in the depths of despair, despondency, grief. And if this is where we are, then that is where this is, that's where we enter. That's the doorway. You know, as in, you know, addictions, we might hit rock bottom. You know, it might be, and if we in a very, in an authentic way, we say, yes, this is where I am now, rather than saying, oh, I shouldn't be here, or how could I have done this, or I'm so stupid, or I've made such terrible mistakes in my life. If I say, okay, this is where I am right now, then this is the entry point. The awareness, the kind, friendly awareness of our experience as it is the entry point to freedom, to finding freedom in our lives. The Indian poet and mystic Kabir said, wherever you are is the entry point. Wherever you are is the entry point. So this practice invites us not to begin from somewhere else, somewhere where we might like to be, but rather from where we are. You know, there's a kind of a funny story of somebody who wants to go to Newcastle, and he asks a stranger, you know, how do I get to Newcastle? And the person says, if I wanted to get to Newcastle, I wouldn't start from here. You know, and that's kind of where the mind can go. You know, I want to get there, but I don't want to start from here. And, you know, the truth of life is we always have to start from here. Here is the gateway. You know, so whatever you're experiencing right now is the gateway, is the doorway. We go in through the doorway of our experience. And there's many different kind of angles in. You know, the Buddha has a teaching called the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, which are kind of, they're like doorways into to freedom. Think of it as like a house with a front and a back and two side entrances. You can go in through awareness of the body. That's one. And just be aware of the body as it is, you know, whatever we're experiencing. We can go through the doorway of feelings, pleasant feelings, unpleasant feelings, neutral feelings. Simply our feelings, our sensations as they are. That's the doorway, another doorway in. Another way in is emotions, you know, just through, you know, emotions and mind states of just noticing, oh, grief might be the doorway in, or sadness, or anger, just awareness of this moment, this anger, this grief, this joy could be a doorway in. And a fourth doorway was slightly more complex, is to go in through the doorway of the teachings. You know, for example, looking, is there suffering right now? Is there clinging? Or other teachings, there's a doorway in. So there's lots of different doorways in, but they all come to the same place. That is insight into you know, the impermanence of all experience, that nothing can be clung to, that nothing is really, in a solid sense, I or mine. We see it's all this changing flow of life. And when we see that deeply, there's a deep freedom that can come with that. There's a Thai teacher who, very renowned teacher of many of the kind of the elder teachers in our tradition here, the insight meditation tradition, named the original teacher Ajahn Chah. He has a very, you know, something he said that I think is very powerful. He says, let go a little and you'll experience a little peace, a little freedom in your life. Let go a lot and you'll experience a lot of freedom, a lot of peace. Let go completely and you'll experience complete freedom, complete peace. Your struggle with the world will be at an end. Your struggle with the world will be at an end. So any of us here, you know, we might say, oh, letting go completely of clinging, of any holding on, you know, that might seem like a bridge too far for us right now. It might seem like a kind of a bit too much. And that's fine. We could say, well, how is it if I let go a little? How about if I see, you know, I see myself holding, I see myself judging a colleague at work, for example, and getting, you know, I don't like them, and why are they like this? And maybe I cultivate kindness, and I see, you know, maybe I just recognize something about them, their humanity, rather than this kind of cardboard, two-dimensional way of looking at them. I might be seeing, oh, they're like this, I don't like this, they talk too loud, or they're, you know, they're not kind, or they're mean, or whatever. But I kind of open some, and I say, okay, yeah, you know, maybe they're having a hard day, or maybe they're having a hard life, you know, and that kind of I can open. And if I might let go a little there, I might find some freedom, and I might, you know, there might be that sense of separation between me and this person that I'm thinking is kind of, you know, not a good person or whatever, might kind of fall away. And I just think, oh, they're another human being doing the best that they can. And letting go a little in that way can bring a little peace. And what letting go a little can help us to see is the possibility that I could even try, you know, that could do that even more. I could do that with a more difficult experience or a more difficult person, you know, maybe a politician, for example, you know. Could you kind of, oh, this person, oh no, I could never be kind to that person, you know. But, you know, with the training, it's a cultivation that we can actually let our heart be open and be open to even the most painful, most difficult experiences that we have this. As humans, we have this capacity. There's a wonderful statement from the psychologist Viktor Frankl, who survived the Nazi concentration camps of World War II. He said, they could take anything from us, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, they could take everything from us, but the last of the human freedoms, the freedom to determine how we meet our experience, the freedom to determine how we respond to our experience. So even in the direst, most painful, horrible experiences of life, that we have that freedom. We can, how do I meet this? Can I meet this experience with an open heart, without resistance? What happens when I do that? So letting go completely, your struggle with the world will be at an end. So the invitation is to bring awareness. What am I aware of? What am I experiencing right now? And how am I meeting this moment? Am I meeting this moment with resistance, with judgment, with clinging, trying to hold on? Or am I meeting this experience, this moment with friendliness, with kindness, with an open heart? And the invitation is just to see when we're resisting, when we're caught up, and just invite an opening. Can I meet this moment without judgment, without resistance? Much of our practice in meditation and in daily life is cultivating the willingness to be with our experience as it is, saying yes to what is. You know, as I'm saying, dancing with life. You know, this is what life is bringing right now. And for each of us, you know, if we had time, maybe a couple of days, you know, to share, you know, what is coming up for you? What are you working with that's challenging? We'd probably find a tremendous amount of, you know, painful, difficult experiences and situations and family life and health, finances, you know, a whole, you know, work situations, many, many difficulties and sorrows, as well as joys, you know, that we'd find a whole range of these. And the invitation is, you know, whatever is present for me, whatever is present for you, to meet it in an open-hearted way. And in doing that, inviting this, saying yes to our experience as it is, to be able to find freedom in the midst of whatever life is bringing, because life will always bring, you know, it will never be exactly the way we want it to be. You know, we may have times when everything is kind of seems to be flowing really well, but then something can happen out of left field. How do I respond to this? How do I meet this moment? So that there may well be pain and there may well be sadness, there may well be grief, but Is there suffering? Is there clinging? Is there resistance? Am I in this relationship of struggle with my life? Or can I meet this sadness? You know, sadness of a parent dying or a loved one or a relationship ending, or, you know, the painful experiences of life. Can we meet these experiences with an open heart and without resistance? And not to say it's easy or simple, because it very often it isn't, but it's a training. It's a training to let our heart be open enough to say yes to this too. You know, to say yes to this period of time that we're living in, that for many of us I think is a really challenging time. I mean, I don't remember another time probably in my lifetime that has been quite like today. And I'm not going to get into anything partisan right this evening. Be easy to do, but just like it's, you know, I find it really challenging, you know, wake up in the morning, you know. But then we can bring kindness to this too, and we can bring kindness to people, you know, cultivate kindness to people that we may feel incredibly distant from or judgmental towards. Can I let my heart open to this person, to this situation, to this experience? So coming back to this theme, you know, awareness is the key to freedom, to peace in our lives. You know, bringing awareness to our experience just as it is. In recent times, an important doorway for me in exploring suffering and its end is through understanding and working with the habits of mind that we get into, the habits and patterns of mind that we get into, habits of mind and of behavior that we get into. And, you know, the reason that as some of you know, I wrote a book on mindfulness and bringing mindfulness to habits and changing habits. And the reason I did that, I wrote this and kind of wanted to get into exploring habits, is that I found that much of our suffering many of the stresses and difficulties and distress of our lives comes from behaviors that are not just one-time things, not just things that happen. I get angry one time, or one time I overeat, or I drink too much. If it were just one time, then probably, hopefully, you know, it'd be something of, okay, I can notice that, that wasn't so helpful. But rather than that, it's behaviors that we do over and over again. And I noticed in my own life how much of the difficulties that I would get into at times would be linked to, tied to behaviors that were really repeated over and over. You know, so for me, it was, you know, working with stress and worry, which I saw was kind of a repetition of thought patterns, of really stories in my mind about something's going to happen, bad things will happen if I don't do this and then I don't do this, and kind of being in this relationship to my experience, which didn't feel wise and didn't feel healthy. But it felt, you know, I was very much pulled into that. Anyone here experience stress? No. anxiety, worry, those things. I think you know what I mean. You know, particularly living in the time that we're living in and kind of big cities and, you know, it's really easy to get into these states of like, you know, I've just got this to do, I've got the family stuff to do, and I've got the work stuff to do, and I've got all these other obligations, and it just seems too much. And we're in this, we get in this tight place, and, you know, it's like we're in a fight or flight, you know, that we're, it's as though, you know, something really bad is going to happen if we don't get this done, or we get this done, and then we move on to the next thing, and, you know, we kind of get into a very, very tight place, and our minds kind of, you know, making stories about what might happen. And, you know, we're in a real struggle with our lives. You know, the image I like is from a Zen story of a monk in a cave who painted a tiger on the wall of the cave. And every time he looked at the tiger, he'd get terrified. You know, the tiger. And of course, he painted the tiger himself. And I think of that, of so much of the stresses and worries and difficulties of our lives are from tigers that we've painted ourselves. You know, we create the picture. This might happen. Oh, no, but then this will happen. And then another terrible thing will happen. If I don't get this done, then my boss will give me a really bad report and I'll lose my job. And then when I lose my job, my partner will leave me and my kids will disown me. You know, all the way the mind can proliferate and we get caught. And it's just, you know, it's just another form of suffering. What happens, what's very interesting, and I'm not going to go into the science of it. I do day-long workshops and weekend workshops and five-day workshops on bringing mindfulness to habits. And this is like a very short thing. But what happens with habits is that anything we repeat often enough, you know, the brain kind of makes a quick, you know, makes it into a quick response thing, makes it automatic and unconscious, takes it out of the intentional realm and makes it automatic. So can be good things, like when you get in the car, hopefully everybody here, if the driver or a passenger, when they get in the car, we'll kind of automatically put on seatbelt, hopefully. You know, reach a certain age, you've done it so many times, the brain just says, you know, when I get in the car, I just automatically do that. And that's great. But often we make automatic things that aren't so helpful to us. You know, things that, you know, maybe we drink. I have an example I often use is, you know, I'm sitting at home feeling lonely. I'm on my own in the evening. And I remember I've got some, you know, some Ben and Jerry's in the freezer. And kind of my mind goes there and I kind of have some. And, you know, and I feel comforted by it. And then a day later, I kind of have that same feeling. I'm kind of sad. I'm lonely. I feel sorry for myself. Oh, yeah, the ice cream and go. You know, and, you know, after a certain repetition, and it's not a given number of times, it's not 4 or 9 or 13 and a half. It's like, you know, at some time, and it's different for all of us, but at a certain time, the brain just goes, oh, this is when I have this feeling, you know, at night, this is what I do. So automatically, when I have that feeling, does anyone know what I'm talking about? I often give examples that are about ice cream. I don't know why, you know, it's mysterious to me. You know, I have a sweet tooth. So that's kind of where my mind often goes. But it becomes automatic. You know, behaviors that we do often enough, we repeat often enough, become automatic. And what happens is they kind of go off of the radar screen. You know, they're kind of underneath the radar. So it's really essential. Mindfulness is really a key to changing habits because mindfulness is really awareness. And what it helps us to do is to bring into consciousness, into awareness, what has become unconscious, what has become automatic. We're kind of making what's invisible visible. And then we can start saying, oh, how do I work with this now? You know, if I can bring awareness to, if I can slow things down enough to when I'm sitting at home, maybe I've thought about it, I've found I've put on 15 pounds in a few months. And I wonder why that is. Oh, it could be the Ben and Jerry's that I have every night, you know. As I think, oh, I'm going to work with that. Well, one thing I might do is I might say, oh, I'm actually going to buy fruit and nuts rather than ice cream when I go to the store. That would be one way. But let's just assume you have ice cream in the freezer. But you could, if you bring awareness to it, your experience, then you can kind of be aware, okay, I know it happens in the evening because I don't get up in the morning and eat ice cream, or I don't raid my friend's freezer to have ice cream when at their house. It's in that situation. You know, it's the context and the feeling that triggers it. And so that's when it happens. So I can be more vigilant. I can be more aware. So one thing I can do is, like, I may be sitting there and I might feel that kind of loneliness come up or that sadness come up. I say to myself, okay, I'm going to stay with this feeling. I'm going to just be aware of it rather than in an automatic way going to the freezer. I can stay with that feeling. And if I can do that, you know, one of the things I can do is just see that these feelings don't last forever. You know, I can maybe ride the waves of this kind of craving or impulse, or it might be a strong emotion, might be sadness, but I can see, oh, it doesn't last forever. I can stay and I can let it come, let it go. And I can learn through that experience that I don't have to do the automatic thing. I don't have to do the habitual thing. So for me, this kind of understanding how much of our suffering comes from behaviors that we repeat often enough for them to become habitual, and assuming now we're talking about unhealthy ones, that through awareness we can open to our experience, learn to be with our experience as it is, and then we can make choices. Once we come into the present moment and awareness of that urge, for example, to eat the ice cream, or when somebody maybe sends you an email that you kind of comes across to you as angry or mean, you know, quite often we might kind of like, you know, and before we know it, we've sent them back an angry email. Or somebody has said something to you, you know, at work, or a family member, you know, they've pushed one of your buttons, and then before you even know it, you've hit back at them. You say, you know, you said something angry to them, or, you know, mean back to them. And so easily we do that. We go straight from, you know, the stimulus to the response without awareness. And so mindfulness allows us to come into awareness of our present moment's experience so that we can make choices. And when we make choices, we can make better choices rather than worse ones, less helpful ones. I want to share with you, some of you may have heard this, this saying from Viktor Frankl, who I mentioned earlier, quoted earlier. He said, between the stimulus and the response is a space. In that space lies our ability to choose. In our ability to choose lies our growth and our freedom. So this is, I think, a really, really powerful statement about awareness, we say about mindfulness. If we can find that space between stimulus and response, that space between feeling the urge for the ice cream or that urge to hit back at somebody who said something angry to us, or that urge to, you know, space out because we're experiencing something uncomfortable, like, oh, I want to go, I'm going to check social media, I'm going to see how many people have liked my post on Facebook, or, you know, just get into surfing the internet, that easily, you know, without awareness, we can just go off and, you know, we can go straight from stimulus to response. But with awareness, we can come into, what am I noticing? What's here right now? What am I feeling in my body? What am I noticing in my emotions? What am I noticing in my mind, my thoughts right now? And if I can stay with that experience, I can stay in that place. It might be in that place of ouch if somebody said something mean or angry to us. Feel that ouch, but rather than hitting back at them, I say, oh, ouch, breathe. You know, I could just do a quick, you know, first aid meditation. I could say, stop, take a breath, observe, proceed. I could do a sober meditation. Stop, observe, breathe, expand awareness, respond mindfully. These are just kind of simple, you know, acronyms to help us in that moment to stay with our experience without acting impulsively or reactively. Can I stay with this experience as it is? And when I do that, then there's a choice available. There's always at least two choices. One would be to do the thing that maybe I habitually do. You know, could be the ice cream, could be getting angry, could be surfing the web, whatever it is that kind of takes me away from my experience. I could do that. Even if I did that, at least I'd be choosing to do that, be intentional. But the other alternative is always the possibility of simply being aware of my experience as it is, coming into present moment awareness. So that choice, that awareness leads to choice. That choice leads to freedom, the potential for freedom. I mean, I could still make an unwise choice, but there's the potential for freedom. When there's a choice, there's a potential for making a healthy choice, a beneficial choice, rather than a less healthy one. You know, it might be to eat some nuts, or it might be to, you know, when I've kind of relaxed enough, say to the person who sent me the angry email or said something angry to me, you know, when you said that hurt, you know, I was sad. But rather than saying, you know, you're a X or Y, I kind of say, okay, this is what I'm actually feeling. This is what I'm aware of. This is what I'm feeling. So we don't get into, you know, a cycle of conflict. You know, so as I've explored habit patterns and how they can easily take us towards suffering, take us kind of in the direction of suffering, what I've become aware of is, you know, four overall kind of tendencies or energies that come up for us. And I'm, you know, just going to name them very simply. One is the energy that we can get, a habit energy of wanting. You know, we move towards the thing that we want. Now, all of these energies are natural energies of life. So nothing wrong with wanting. You know, wanting helps us to get what we need to survive. I mean, if there wasn't that energy of wanting or desire, we wouldn't, you know, be able to feed ourselves or get what we need to survive in life. So it's a natural energy of life. But without awareness, that wanting can turn into craving. It can turn into greed. It can turn into clinging. It can turn into addiction if we're not aware of that wanting. If we act out that wanting without awareness, it's like, oh, this, I'll have more of this. One hamburger? Well, 12 will be even better, you know. So that it can become craving. It can become the type of clinging that the Buddha said leads to suffering. The second is when we resist our experience. Again, resisting our experience, not wanting things to be a certain way. There's a wisdom in that. It's a natural evolutionary energy of life as well. It's like, you know, it defends, you know, allows us to defend ourselves against what's threatening. You know, so we can, if something, you know, is coming at us, we can fight or we can flee. So it's a natural energy. But without awareness, that energy turns into, you know, anger or judgment, can turn into hatred, and it can lead to conflict. It can lead to war without awareness, where we act out that energy in a unmindful way or an unaware way. So just bringing awareness to our experience allows us to use those energies where it's helpful to do so, the wanting or the resistance. Another energy is the energy of distraction, or kind of, you know, it could be a spacing out kind of. And that's also a natural energy. It can be a very helpful thing to, you know, once we, you know, if we've been working at something, just let the mind go. Maybe just kind of open up and do a little bit of daydreaming. It's interesting how many scientific inventions come out of that, you know, just letting the mind go. You know, people having great insights in the shower, you know, or when they're out for a walk. So this is it's a very natural, very helpful energy. But if, again, without awareness, it becomes just getting lost in distraction, just spending hours and hours just spaced out, you know. So the key in all of these cases with these unhealthy, you know, patterns, the key is awareness itself. Can I be aware of my experience here and now? And then I can make a choice. So I can go with the natural energies of life rather than just kind of not being aware and acting them out unskillfully. Another energy is the energy of doing, you know, this kind of being driven to do things, you know, kind of moving ahead. You know, it can be at the root of healthy ambition, getting things done, you know, inventing things and starting a business, you know, that sense of energy. And it can be great. But without awareness, it can turn into stress, worry, anxiety, where we're constantly moving into the future. We're not present with our experience. So all of this is to say that that these, you know, that habit energies of life are natural, but we need to bring awareness to them. We need to bring awareness to our experience. Then we can make choices that actually lead to happiness, to freedom, to well-being, rather than to more and more suffering. So what I would like to do is to finish off this evening, since we've only got a few minutes left, with just a very, very brief meditation. And this is something I do at a longer, you know, much longer in workshops. But just in this, for now, just invite you to, you know, just let your attention come inward and just be aware of your experience. Come into the body, bring awareness to your breathing. And I'm going to ask you two questions, two broad questions, to see if you can relax and can sit here, be here with a sense of ease. And the first question is, what is your deepest wish for yourself and for your life? You know, think of, you know, what would a life that was fulfilled and, you know, really feel fully present, something that you really aspire to, living in a way that you really aspire to. It could be, you know, if I think of it sometimes, I think of living with a sense of peace, of inner peace and well-being. It might be for you, it might be in living in a, being creative and fulfilled in your work and in your life. Or being in loving relationship, connected with others. Just see what comes up for you. What is your deepest wish for yourself, for your life? And as you bring, if you can, just bring awareness to whatever comes up. Meet whatever comes up with kindness. Just notice how that feels in your body, how it feels in your emotions, you know, what you notice in your mind. And just take that in. Take in the feeling, the felt sense of this experience, of just this aspiration, this wish for yourself and for your life. Notice, take in how it feels, whatever is present right now, with kindness, with acceptance. You might take a full breath and just relax on the out-breath. And now the second question is, now, what, if anything, gets in the way or is in the way of living this aspiration, this intention, fully in your life right now? What, if anything, is an obstacle? Is there something in your life that feels, oh, I can't really live in this way because of this? You know, because of my health, or because of, you know, I'm not in the relationship I want to be in, or I don't have the job that I'd like, or whatever comes up for you. Or I'm always busy, or worrying, or angry, or whatever. Just to notice what, if anything, gets in the way. And just see what comes up. Is there something that feels like an obstacle to living as fully, as happily, as freely as you would, as you aspire to, as you wish to? And again, just take that in, breathe that in, that, and feel whatever you're feeling right now. And if we were to do this for longer, I'd invite you to kind of maybe make a commitment of how you might work with this and open to this, and if it's a habitual pattern at the root of this, how you might work to change it. But right now, just as a simple practice of awareness, maybe giving you some information of an area of life that you might bring greater attention to. You know, is there something that would be helpful to really look at, inquire into? Is there something that I could let go of here? Is there something I'm believing about myself and my life that is keeping me kind of in a painful relationship to my experience? So simply aware of your experience as it is right now. And when you're ready, just taking a breath and let your awareness come back into the room. And just invite you to think about and maybe reflect on this. Is there some area of your life that that really does call for attention, where there is some gap between how you're living and how you would really wish to live? How, you know, what would it take to really bring attention to this and in a kind and a non-judging way? And if we had a few more minutes, I'd also invite us to kind of be aware of things that maybe we're not aware of, that they are also call, you know, invite mindfulness to things that maybe we take in, you know, in terms of our, you know, position in society or our role in society. You know, how maybe as members of a dominant group, we don't need to bring awareness to certain privileges that we have. Mindfulness invites us to kind of let all of this in too. You know, not just what's in front of us, maybe in our face, but things that we might be unaware of because, you know, we swim in a sea of racial privilege or class privilege or gender privilege or sexual orientation. So all of this, that mindfulness invites us to bring all of this into awareness. So again, the doorway to freedom is awareness of our present moment experience without judgment, without resistance, without clinging. And when we bring awareness to our experience just as it is, we end the conflict with our life. We end the conflict with our experience. And as Ajahn Chah said, our struggle with the world will be at an end. So thank you for your kind attention. And it's been wonderful just to be together this evening and practice together this evening.